I'm Joni De Winter.
And I am Susan Grant.
And we are Bell Street,
who are an events band and production company.
And we're here to talk to you today about our fun and failures.
On our journey from being scared to doing it anyway.
We did that super fast.
We did. Very definite.
Yes. Today, we have a fantastic guest. We're so excited for you to hear what he's got to say because we love talking to him so much. He's been a massive help to us and our business.
And it's our first Zoom chat as well with our podcast. So that's been really fun. He's based over in Ireland. And we had a really great interview with him.
Yeah, his name is Jason Ward. He's a creative consultant and he's going to teach you all about your big idea, how to pitch it, how to stay authentic to yourself. And also, because we know each other quite well, we end up having some ridiculous stories as well. So
there's a few tangents that we will apologise for.
And a few pets.
So. Definitely worth a listen. So, Jason Ward.
So first of all, shall I be serious now? Shall I say thank you so much for having me on your podcast? I really appreciate it.
Well,
and I love what you two do. And I think that you two are actually an inspiration to many people. And sometimes it's quite difficult when you're in the middle of doing it to realize exactly what you're doing and how far you've come and how much your story and journey also inspires other people. So never forget that, because you've done and achieved so much. And the fact that you think that anything I've said or done has helped you is enormously, enormously gratifying for me. So thank you. Now, I started my career a long, long time ago as a dancer in the Jenny set at the 1984 or 1985 Camberley Civic Hall Panto featuring Davy Jones from the Monkees and some woman called Tessa who'd been in Triangle. Yeah, that was my first professional job. And I went on, then I went to college and then I worked in theatre for a while at my own dance company. I also taught dance at Pineapple and then I went to work on cruise ships. And I made a career out of that, really, as a performer, as a choreographer, as a creative, as a manager, and then ended up being corporate, managing the entertainment development across two brands, Cunard and P&O. And then when COVID happened, that was the end of that. And so then I started helping other people. And it really happened by accident. I posted on LinkedIn that I was available. And a load of people contacted me off LinkedIn and said, could you help us? And that's what I did. So I set it up as a business. Then I met these two amazing women who not only have like families and all sorts of other shit going on, but decided to write the most hilarious musical I've pretty much ever seen. Can I say second most?
Yes.
The second most, because the funniest is obviously the Book of Mormon, but then Hugh the Musical is not far behind that. And then I met you two as well.
We met in Boscombe.
Glam.
Because we signed up to your course and it was March, 2 years ago. We got stuck in the most horrendous traffic coming down.
And we were so nervous about coming, but we'd just seen it on, like one of us had seen it and gone, right, let's come on. We're going to be serious about what we do now. Let's push ourselves out there. And it was called What's the Big Idea or something.
Creating
like
that. Creating the Perfect Pitch. That was at Tosh in Boscombe.
In Tosh, the old schoolhouse.
We
were starting to promote Hugh the Musical and we wanted to be able to pitch it to people. And that was basically why we went. But we turned up late.
And we were just so mortified because we'd had to drop children and stuff and we were there and then we couldn't park. But that's where it just, it started. We were very inspired and we still struggle with the big idea. With everything we do, we try and pitch it, but we still are like, what would Jason say?
But it's really difficult. Don't worry, because it is really difficult. Anyone that is putting together like a creative idea or business pitch or whatever should think of that. It's the pyramid method that from Barbara Minto, who was at McKinsey Consulting. So you have to filter everything down and start your pitch with what your big idea is. But to get to your big idea, as you two both know, is easier said than done. You've got to work through all of the other big ideas that you have. And it's about working out what your show, what your story, what your business idea, what it is actually about. Like, what is that? it's so useful to do when you're creating, because it does make you really consider everything that you really need, and also helps you consider your direction. And I think I probably said at the time when I did it, I learned it because I did such a bloody terrible presentation when I was at Carnival UK, and I'd been negotiating with English National Ballet. I'll just drop a quick name there. So I had contacted them because I'd been challenged to find some cultural activities for the Queen Mary II's transatlantic crossings. English National Ballet had a really good outreach program. So I had been negotiating with them and basically said, yeah, we've got a cruise ship, you've got some dancers, let's get together. And they were like, yeah, let's do it. And then I put this whole program together and I presented it to the executive and my sort of leadership. And they rejected the idea out of hand. And somebody said to me, listen, it's a great idea, but you presented it wrongly, because I had presented it as ballet, because it's ballet that I love, and I've gone ballet, 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 oh, it's lovely ballet, but they weren't interested. And what I had to work out was what was the big idea. And that's when I learned this about the pyramid principle. And the big idea of that was a partnership with a really established and well-known successful cultural brand. That was really the big idea. It could have been English National Ballet. It could have been someone else. We went on to do it with other people as well, the Oliviers, and now with they're doing it with the Royal Shakespeare Company as well. But the concept is exactly the same. And it was the big idea wasn't the ballet. The big idea was the other things behind it. And it was very helpful for me to go through that painful, horribly painful experience and be told this wonderful idea that I'd been creating and I thought was just brilliant was actually shit. That's how we met in Boscombe talking about ballet. How many people can say that in their lives?
Not many.
Not many.
And then we've used it a lot.
Have you?
Well, we've tried to use it a lot. We always draw the triangle and then we try and condense, but it's something we're still working on learning.
We had a meeting a few weeks ago because we like to come back to you just to check in with life. And what you have done is given us a structure that we look at our next project and go, oh, okay, so we want to do this and this and this and this. Hold on. What does the audience want? What do we want?
Right.
And recently we were going through names for different things and you'd said, no, too much. No, 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 no. We're like, oh. And it's difficult when someone says no to you.
Well,
but actually stripping it back and just keeping it authentic and to the point is really good.
Right. So I think there's two parts to that. First of all, authenticity, absolutely. You can't be something you're not. Funnily enough, I'm reading a book at the moment called How Sondheim Can Change Your Life by Richard Scotch. I'm not sure how you pronounce that, but anyway. So this morning I was reading the chapter about Sondheim's early shows, and he's talking about Anyone Can Whistle, which has great songs in, but it flopped. It lasted 9 performances when it first opened. Why was that? Because it took the piss out of the audience in its original production. The end of the first act, the actors took the piss out of the audience didn't like it. So that's what you're doing, has to have respect for the audience. But the second chapter that I read was about Gypsy. And what the writer was saying is that when you're a stripper, basically you are you, there's nowhere to hide. You have literally stripped away all the artifice and it is you. And that's what makes the experience of being a stripper, some people say, so liberating. Not suggesting, by the way, that you need to be strippers. If you want to be, I'm happy to help you with that, you know?
They're but, very close, to be fair.
Yeah. But I think the point is you have to look at what the audience wants. Sorry, this goes another step. Who is your audience? So you have two audiences at the moment because you have an audience that you have for functions, for weddings, all that sort of stuff, which is kind of different from your musical theatre audience. There is probably some overlap, but when you're creating for two different audiences. So you have to find which part of yourselves fits the wedding audience, which part of yourself fits the musical theatre audience. And if you mix them up, you'll fuck up. Because if you start pissing around in your wedding audience and being funny and doing Cue the Musical...
Or stripping.
Well, yeah, you're going to be, you're not going to get many more bookings. So what you're saying is, yes, you're working out your idea and you're stripping that back to the basics. That's not the same as being a stripper, but you're also finding out, is it an idea that's authentic to you? Like you're not trying to be someone else. I don't know whether I needed to help you with that or whether you really knew that yourselves.
This is why we wanted to introduce you to people, because we haven't discovered anyone like you in the terms of, like, you can look for a business coach, or you can look for, you know, a life coach or whatever, but finding someone who, like, comes from your background and has that kind of passion for creativity, but also that kind of level-headedness that's definitely we, but a lot of creatives kind of lack. There should be more of you, or you should be making more money.
Let's clone Jason Ward.
I mean, we did need to talk to you about that, because we've talked to business coaches, we've talked to other people, and there's a certain kind of understanding that has to come from someone who understands what it feels like to be creative and want to still kind of have that authenticity.
But it is also for, like, you, I mean, why be a dancer? Why push yourself out to, why?
By me personally or why anyone?
No, I'm just saying, as a collective of creatives, we put ourselves into these exposing positions, right? Because it's inside us and we can't do anything else. And we can get so carried away. And quite often, at some point, we're told we're not good enough. We're not this, we're not that, we're not the right shape, we're not the right height. It can be exhausting.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it can be that, you know, something isn't, you are not good enough. Not you personally, but one is not good enough.
Yeah.
What would be more useful is to be told why.
Yes.
And that's something that does lack a little bit in our industry. So, you know, in the nicest possible way, if you come to me with an idea and I sort of say no, it's because I just don't think it's good enough. And not that you're not good enough, the idea is not there. But what I like to see is where people's thought processes are. How are they getting to that idea? And I think there's something else that you said in there, which is about education. So I went to theatre school. I went to Guildford School of Acting. They taught me some stuff, absolutely. But if I look back on it now, it was a big fucking wasted opportunity for 3 years. I didn't learn the history of musical theatre, which is my business. I should know about that. If you go and study accountancy, you'll study how accountancy got to be where it is, as well as the practice of it now. We didn't learn anything about the business, like the business of the business. None of that at all. We did learn that we were all shit and should do exactly what we were told, because that's how this fucking business works. Dude, if you don't like it, out the door. There's 100 people that want it more. Great. That's an experience which at the time I kind of accepted. I was 18 when I went to college, and you sort of accept it. Oh my God, these people must know more than me. And there is still quite a bit of that around today. It's as I've got older, I've realized that actually it shouldn't have been that way, and it doesn't need to be that way. I think the Guildford School of Acting of that time wasted the biggest opportunity they had for many years with lots of young talent, because they had the opportunity to really help people discover their reason, why they're doing what they do and what their passion is, rather than trying to you know, beat it out of them. And I think there's a lot of dogma around what we do in our industry as well. People want to protect their own position. There's not a lot of pragmatism in the sense of, let's support people because it helps us. So let's share, because sharing is what's going to help us develop. There's a lot of, when I say dogma, I mean, there's a lot of people that want it to be a certain way because that's the way it was for them. And luckily, some of that is wearing out. So now, you know, I'm the head of casting for a company called Taglive, which is a production company. We work internationally. I'm based in the Republic of Ireland. A little side note here as well. Why am I based in the Republic of Ireland? Because I came to live here because I wanted to live in Ireland. I saw Taglive advertising a lot for performers with EU passports. And so on LinkedIn, I basically wrote to the CEO of Taglive and said, "Hi, Andy, you're looking for EU performers. I'm based in Ireland. How can I help you?" He said, "Why don't you talk to the board?" So 2 days later, I spoke to him and other execs. And then we worked out a deal, and now I'm working for them full time as head of casting. So
that's a lovely example of just fucking doing it, isn't it?
Just fucking do it. I did have an idea before I wrote to him. Right. So I did have something to back it up with. Like, I was thinking, right, if I write to this guy, I'm going to get one chance. Yeah, I'm going to have like my elevator pitch. And what's my big story? And my big idea was, you need EU performers. I'm in the EU. And then everything else was underneath it. And Andy's the kind of guy that he just wants that big idea. He went, "I like the idea." "Right, yeah. I know what you've done. Let's do it." I was ready. I had to convince the other people in the room, But that's how that worked. Back to what I was saying about pragmatism, dogmatism. So now we audition a lot of people and we work really hard to not waste people's time when we're auditioning them, to give people proper feedback, but also to give them time. So we don't do open audition. We invite them. So they apply, we invite a limited number of people at a time. If we've got more people than we need, then we have more sessions. If you come on audition with us, you're going to stay all day. You're going to be 2-3 hours dance. You're going to have a vocal audition. And we're going to see how you work, how you learn, what happens when you get it wrong. We get to know you. And then we follow that up with an individual interview as well. And that's something we believe in really strongly. So no one is coming along to an audition, singing 4 notes of a song and going home, or doing 4 kicks across the room and going, they're getting to bring themselves. And this is something that is kind of happening a bit more in our industry, which is really good to see. People are recognizing that we need to see the whole person, that we need to allow people to bring them their whole selves to their performance, their audition. And we had a really good choreographer we worked with here in Ireland called Megan Huare. And Megan's brilliant. And she said in one of our auditions, the audition is when you show us your whole self. Rehearsals are when we try to get everything precise. And I think that's really, really important. Now, back when I was auditioning as a hoofer, that wasn't the case at all. Now, you know, you had to, it was tits and teeth, push yourself to the front all the time, you know, try and psych. I mean, I remember working with the guy, Danny, and his thing was he could do like 10 pirouettes. And every audition you went to, Danny would stand at the front of the warm-up and just do his 10 pirouettes or whatever it was. And people get freaked out. But that was all part of it, you know. But he was actually a really nice guy. That wasn't him at all. So, yeah. So I think that education is really a massive, massive part. Arts education is a massive part of help our whole industry develop. Yeah. I can't remember what the question was, Susan, but hopefully that 15-minute rant has answered it.
As you were saying about the audition process, walking into that room and just being seen as one of 600, 800 people that day or whatever is exhausting. You almost need a checklist. I remember going to Disney auditions and I thought, well, why did I bother? Because I'm not this, I'm not that, I'm not that.
And there's no point. That's why we, you know, at TAG, when we advertise a job, we put the whole casting breakdown, contract length, the salary, accommodate, whatever, is everything is there. Because also, you know this, you go to an audition, you've got to take a day off your job, which is either going to piss off your boss or lose you money or both. You know, you get up extra early, you're spending money, the whole thing. And like you said, Susan, you get there and it's like, why did I do this? It's much better. I did that. I went to an audition once. It was actually a closed audition, so I was invited. It was me. I'm 5'10", yeah? The other guys in the audition were all over 6'1". They were all men of colour and they all had dreadlocks and were ripped to fuck. Now, I was in good shape, but I wasn't that. And I'm like, why am I like, guys, what am I like Eugene from Greece in this? It was a pop video audition, a music video. Like, what am I? You know, why did you invite me? What's the point? And of course, you know, after 5 minutes, I was nothing to do with anything. I just wasn't what they were looking for. But yeah, it was a waste of time. But there are ways to not do that. You know, I've been lucky in the experience I had. I worked hard to get it and I made lots of mistakes and I had opportunities that I missed out on for various reasons. And I, you know, I look at that and I think, you know, I want to help people not miss out. So I remember when I was auditioning, I had a real panic. 1 year, nothing was happening. And I'd done a panto for a really big panto producer called EMB at the time, who did pantos like everywhere. And it got to the middle of the year and I was like, nothing was happening. Nothing was coming. So I phoned them up and I went, listen, I've worked for you for 2 years. Have you got anything this Christmas? So this was probably in like June, July. They went, yeah, whatever it was. And they gave me a contract. I was like, great. Phew, got something coming up. 3-4 weeks later, I was offered My Fair Lady, which is a national tour directed by Simon Callow and West End. I was like, right, I've signed for panto. And the agent called me and said, listen, they've offered you the job. I said, well, I've got this panto. Can you help me? And went, oh, I don't know if I can do that. You're going to have to do it. And so I did the panto. I didn't do the My Fair Lady. Didn't do the West End. Didn't do any of that. If it happened now, I'd be to the panto producer. No, fuck off. Much better job. You know, sue me. Do whatever. When you're a young performer like that, there's no one to tell you that actually you have the power. And I said this to some people in an audition a few weeks ago, like, as singers and dancers, you actually, you're made to feel a lot as if you don't have any power in this industry. And you probably feel the same thing, you know, when you're looking for work, either for the wedding function part of what you're doing, or for your creative work. At Tag Live, we produce loads of shows, hundreds of shows. But if there's no one to perform them, we've got nothing. We've got a PowerPoint fucking presentation and some rough tracks. That's all we have. And we need the talent. So we need singers and dancers and presenters and performers and every creative. We need that. Otherwise, we've got nothing. It doesn't matter that we've got a contract worth millions with TUI. We can't do anything in their you know, 8 resorts across Europe and the Middle East if we've got no one to be there. And this is, once again, you know, something that's really an easy fix for people to start saying to performers and to creatives. You do have that power. Cameron McIntosh, massively successful, massively clever man. But if no one had written any decent shows, you know, he'd still be producing, you know, fucking third-rate tours of Pirates of Penzance. You know, we'd probably be actually doing Jersey Boys tributes now. But do you know what I mean? He wouldn't be worth 20 billion quid or whatever. Why do I do what I do now? It's because I want people to realize this. I want people to understand, actually, you do have some autonomy. Yeah, it's difficult, but you have some say in this. And you don't have to accept, you know, rubbish. Don't work with people if they treat you badly. You know, if you want to work with someone for a year, don't work with them for a day. You know, just don't. I mean, you spoke with Linus, didn't you, from Awkward Productions?
Yes.
Like, he's had a journey. You know, he really has. And now he's selling out weeks in New York with the Gwyneth Paltrow show. Well, you know, and I saw him in a studio theatre in Poole, like you probably did as well, yeah?
Yeah. We saw them in London.
Oh, sorry, excuse me.
And, yeah, we spoke to them. They were so kind. But, yeah, we're hoping to speak to them. They're on our list.
Yeah.
They're brilliant. They've been through it, though, and they deserve it. But the other thing with them that's a really good example is they, you know, they were on a really busy trajectory. Joseph was still working. If I think at the time that I saw them, and probably when you saw them, Joseph was still working British Transport Police,
right,
and doing like night shifts and whatever. But they took the time to share what they knew with someone else, and they weren't hiding anything. They weren't saying, oh, no, this is ours, you can't have it. They were, this is ours, take what you need.
Yeah.
Because they still have it. They didn't lose anything by doing that. I think that's really, really important.
Something we've been talking about, it seems to be like a theme of our guests for this season, really, is that kind of how gatekeeping just isn't cool anymore, you know, like, and we were talking, someone said, oh, you know, women are kind of taught that to kind of gatekeep because, you know, but actually it is everyone and it is a lot of people because I guess money and gigs are sparse. And I think it seems to be something the universe is showing us at the minute is that whole, the more you share, the more you network, the more you talk, the more you don't hold on to things, everything opens more.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think there is a certain amount of gatekeeping in our industry. And I think it's to do with class and finances. Basically, the more money you have, the easier it is for you to get through those gates, just the way people speak, the language that they want. You know, it's very easy for, I'm not going to name someone because I'll probably get sued, but very well known,
you just go
very well known, say creative actor, director, writer type person, who in an interview she said, I just had to hang around in London. I just had to keep like hanging around and just waiting for that opportunity to come up and all that. It's like, yeah, of course you could fucking hang around in London because your daddy bought you a flat. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone else was fucking working down Starbucks, love. You know, and that is gatekeeping. And that's another part of the industry which is difficult to correct. I was working with a brilliant female creative who's actually originally from Croatia but now lives in the UK. I'm not going to say her name because with anyone that I speak to, I don't share too much. But the essence of it was she's getting frustrated because she's written and performed this great show, just like yourselves. She's performed it in like fringes. She's won awards for it. She wants to go to Edinburgh. And she's got to work full time to support herself. And she can't afford. She's like, oh, my God, I'm going to take 2 weeks off work. I'm going to have to put this many thousands in, whatever it is, to go to Edinburgh. And And I can see these people doing it. And I'm like, listen, and this is where I had to say no to someone. When it's not going to be your dream. You're not going to be that person. Not right now. Because you don't have $8,000 to spend right now. And you're probably not going to. Because what she's thinking about, should she get like a full-time, if you like, proper job? And I said, well, yeah, why don't you actually? Why don't you do that? You'll get a full-time salary. You're still young, so you've got the energy to do stuff in the evenings and the weekends and work on it. You'll get paid leave. So if you want to go and do your show somewhere, you can. But also you've got time to plan. Now, I never tell people to give up like creativity, but let's be realistic. For her and for many of us, you know, we need to have an income, you know, if we don't have a private income. And I think that side of our industry, there's a lot of gatekeeping there, because it's very easy, if you've never been in the situation where you're really scrambling to make a living, just to say, hey, Joni, why don't you come and see me tomorrow at 11 o'clock in London? And Joni's like, oh my God, how am I, God, oh, that means I've got to get the train at 7, which means it's going to be a peak time train, which means it's going to cost me more than my car. But if I don't go, that's not fair. But if you've never been in that position to think that someone's thinking that way, then you are, maybe not on purpose, but by default, you are gatekeeping. It could be, Joni, what would be a good time for us to meet and where would be convenient for you? That's what we do in another industry. You wouldn't say, meet me tomorrow. So I think there's a lot of sharing which goes on, which is good to see. And we should encourage that at all times. But at the same time, we have to be aware of the realities, and we have to make allowances for that as well. And I think that for me is one of the biggest frustrations. And I never really understood what that meant, actually, till I went to college. And then when I left and I had performance contracts lined up, but I still had to work in the summer between leaving college and those performance contracts when others didn't need to. And so I think that's something that we should acknowledge as a business as well, that we have to do more to help people that are talented.
Same in the music industry as well, isn't it? Yeah. About people who are trying to get signed or radio.
In British TV and film, it's 9% of people working in TV and film production come from a working class background. Mm. And that's just, frankly, that whose story are we telling? The story that you tell in Hugh, for example, which, folks, if you're listening to this and you haven't seen Hugh the musical, then you can, well, should do, because it's hilarious. That's a story that no one else has told. But lots of people, as you know now, lots of people relate to it. And, you know, it's important that you were able to get out there and tell that story.
We're still wondering what the story is, to be fair.
You
know, like,
oh, God.
It changes each time.
And
I mean, when we were
thing.
On the floor crying the night before we had to first perform it, we were just like, how are we going to put this out?
Right. And actually, but that's a really good point, though, because there are stages like that. Like I took a course over here in creative writing, so I'm trying to, you know, write a book. And I was just so happy that I got to the end of it. And then I went back and read it. What the fuck is this about? You know? And I'm just so happy. And it's the same. It's like, you know, when you first learn a song, you're like, oh my God, I know all the words now. Yeah, but now do something with it. And it's the same, you know, the joy in getting your show actually performed. I finished writing it. And then, you know, the night before, oh my God, it's going to be terrible. I'm going to have a nervous breakdown, blah, blah, blah. And then the elation the next day when you actually do it. Like, we did it. We went through it. And the people cheered. I mean, 90% of them were your family, but they loved it anyway. So that's great, you know. No, but it's still good. You told me that. You told me it was your friends and family. I'm not making that up. I'm not being cruel, because these girls are brilliant. But so then you got through that. You get through that stage, and then you go through the stage of, right, now let me work out what it is we're trying to do and what bits actually were good and what bits weren't. So that's just normal part of the creative process.
It's nice to know to expect that, though, isn't it? So next time when we're creating our next thing, we can expect that process, which will probably make us cry a little less, maybe. But
no, still cry, don't worry. Please don't stop crying. You should, because you need to feel the emotion as well. You can't shut yourself off from it.
You've also told us not to create it, so we're definitely creating it right now without telling you. Sorry.
What are you creating now then? I don't know what you're... You told me, you gave me a hint about your next show, but then you wouldn't tell me anything about it.
You said to work on our thing that was going to make us money for a good solid 2 or 3 weeks.
Yes, that's true. That's so it. You haven't done that, have you?
We've signed up to two fringes with the creative thing, even though we haven't written it yet. So,
I'm not surprised.
We have split our time. So we're like, right, Jason would want us to. So we divide our day in half. And then, whereas before we would have just gone, oh, we'll do that later. We do half the day on the proper thing. And then half the day, because we're so excited about writing it and it's new and we've got lots of ideas for it. So it's hard to kind of not.
And we can bring it to Ireland. We can bring it to Ireland.
Absolutely.
Also, should we have T-shirts that are like Bell Street, WWJD, with what would Jason do?
Yeah.
I think you should have that. Absolutely.
I know you've got really limited time, so, and we always get really distracted, but tell us about...
Have you got a serious question?
Well, I just want to hear about what you're doing, because obviously you moved to Ireland, a change of pace, a change of what you were doing, and then obviously you kept keeping your hand in with the tagline. Not keeping your hand in, but obviously very successfully doing that. But then you've got this whole other side that, well, I guess we haven't known you for very long, but that is quite new for us to see the writing, and you have your Substack.
So I have a Substack, Jason Ward Creative, which I write articles, reviews, interviews. There are videos, podcast playlists, and even pieces of short fiction on there as well now. And one of the things that I wanted to, or my wife and I wanted to do when we came to Ireland, was to have a mini sabbatical. So we did that, and I studied creative writing because I really wanted to work on that. And I kind of knew that I could write, if that makes sense. So I could write clearly and descriptively. But what I didn't know was how to write a story. And I think there's a difference between sort of creating a story. So, for example, if I was creating shows or concepts, then I can create a story for that. And I can help other people with, you know, the structure or whatever of their shows or their pieces. But it's a very different discipline to actually writing that as a book. And I love reading and I love books. And so I thought, I want to try that. And I did a course at the Irish Writers' Centre with a great group of people. And that was... basically, you know, you had to present pieces and you've got challenges that you're given and homework that you need to do, and you're reading other people's pieces and trying to understand why these pieces might be good and why they're not, and then the same about your own pieces. And then so I started to then work on just sort of writing ideas that came into my head as much as I could. I entered competitions, I had some pieces published in literary magazines. And then I self-published a collection of short stories called Love Hangover and Other Stories, which is an ebook available on Amazon and all other good bookstores. Love Hangover and Other Stories. So there's 11 short stories in there. And the reason that I published those, and this is something else as well, which I think is important, I hadn't realized was important in the creative process, is that I'd written them all and I'd edited them and I'd worked on them and I finessed them. And they were just sat there sort of on my laptop. And I thought, I need to get them out because I need to, otherwise I'm just going to keep working on these 11 stories. And they are varied. I mean, we have the title story, Love Hangover, it starts off in Studio 54, explains how a fictional retelling of how come Bianca Jagger went into Studio 54 on a white horse and how that came about. The stories from the Cold War. There's a woman that stabs her husband to death because she doesn't like raisins, which is hilarious, I think. There's a story which got turned down in a competition. I was challenged to write a romantic comedy. Yeah. So I wrote a story about a guy who writes advertising jingles, but he also has a crush on Barry Manilow. And he just knows, he comes up with this jingle and he knows that it's a perfect tune and song for Barry Manilow. And he has this whole dream about how Barry's going to hear it on the radio and come down to his studio in his Rolls Royce and take him up to his apartment, and he's going to be, you know, married to Barry. And they said, no, that's not a romantic comedy.
Oh.
I said, well, it's romantic and it's fucking funny, but they weren't having it. Anyway, Love Hangover and other stories. That is available now. But it's been so kind of personally rewarding to do that. And it's a lot to learn. And, you know, it's a new way of expressing creativity for me. But I would encourage people, not necessarily to write a book, but find other ways of expressing your creativity as well. Because it does give you other insights into what your main focus might be. So I would say to both of you, don't find any other ways of expressing your creativity, because then I know that you're going to both write novels and become millionaires.
As someone who does, and it does sound like you jump in and go, where is that opportunity? Right, I'm doing that. If you are dealing with someone new, if somebody isn't sure whether to step in to a creative future, what would your advice be to somebody?
Well, that's a good question, because I find it difficult sometimes because I haven't really had doubts. And I think it's very easy when we have done something to take it for granted. You know, I have lived in the UK, I moved to France, I moved to Spain, I moved to Argentina, moved to America, moved back to the UK, moved to Ireland, done all sorts of stuff. Because some of it because I've had to, some of it because I wanted to. So I never thought of myself as kind of being fearless in that way, but I suppose things don't worry me like that. Moving to another country doesn't scare me. So I might be a bad person to ask, because I will just do it. However, there is a caveat. I am kind of prepared. I do kind of work it out, like how I'm going to do it. That's the practical side. Now, if somebody is considering a creative career, I don't think anyone that's had any kind of success in the creative fields has ever doubted that it's what they wanted to do. I think you always know that it's what you want to do. The challenge is, first of all, your own self-belief, and then also listening to stories and stuff from people around you. If you don't do it, you will always regret it. It's going to gnaw away at you forever. Okay? And if you do it and it all goes to shit, you did it. So just fucking do it. Like, why are you asking me? You know, if you need that level of kind of, I know this sounds really harsh and I'm not trying to be harsh, but like what we do as creative people is completely vital to the world. Okay. It's completely vital. And I may have said this to you as well, but creativity isn't just about writing a song or creating a show or a novel or whatever. Like the person that designed your fridge was creative. Okay. Someone had to design, someone had to work out what shape it was going to be, what color it was going to be, all that. That's creative. So creativity is what makes the human race, you know, different from every other species. If you think that you want to be a dancer, then why aren't you going to dance class? I don't get it. So there'll be some. So then tell me what the obstacles are and let's work out a way of doing it. And there are obstacles that we've spoken about as well. There are financial obstacles. There are background obstacles, all of those things. So maybe you want to be a dancer, but you can't see the way into that. But you still know you've got this creative sort of feeling and vibe going on. Create something. Do it. And like I said, if it fucks up, you did it. When you get to 45, you know, and you never did it, it's going to be like having an illness. You just won't be happy. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's important that people do that. And I would also say, you know, help other people do it too. Like those of us, you know, I'm lucky I'm able to help other people. And by the way, if people want any help, I'm sure you can give them my details. They can drop me a line. I'm happy to help if people just want to have a chat or whatever. But, you know, recognize those people around you that might be heading into the creative and help them do it. You might not know about it, but find someone that does. You know, I had somebody ask me the other week about, oh, my daughter, she thinks she might want to do like a graphic and set design course, blah, blah, blah. What should I do? So have you taken her to your local theater? No. Well, why not? What, how the fuck do you think she's going to learn then? You know, so I would say to people, you just, you know, in the words of the Bell Street Duo, just fucking do it. Just do it. Is that helpful or is that a bit cruel?
Well, we agree with you. So
okay. Very helpful. It's beautifully put into words.
I don't want to be harsh. I know it's difficult. I do recognize it's difficult, but.
It's a really harsh industry, though. It's really harsh. And so.
Every industry is harsh in a way.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when I was at Carnival and COVID hit, they got rid of 50% of the staff. And that was fucking harsh. There was no need to, because everyone could have got paid. You know, the government was going to pay them in the UK. But they did it because they wanted to reduce liabilities later down the line. It was harsh. You know, if you work in Wetherspoons, that's harsh. You know, but that's harsh. So I get what you're saying. Our industry is harsh. We have to work to make it less so and to make it more welcoming. But I think if you believe that you should be doing something, then you should be doing it. You can't look at you two. Like, you two got fucking full-time massive lives going on. You know, I don't have kids. I don't have a mortgage. I've got a lovely house in the middle of nowhere. Very, very happy. And I look at you two and think, oh my God, look at all the shit they're doing. I need to do stuff. You're like, oh my God, I'm so lazy. Why can't I get a... I'm doing a short story competition at the moment. I've got to write a fairy tale. I fucking hate fairy tales, but I've got to write one, yeah? But I'm like, oh, I've got to talk to Bell Street. They're doing loads. How can I go to them and say, oh, God, I can't finish my 2,500-word story because I don't know. Because I'm looking at Facebook. You know, seriously. I just want to, like, work on my Insta for a little bit. No, don't do shit. Literally do shit. Oh, yeah, and by the way, also, yeah, everybody needs an Insta profile, all that. I get it, but it's not your life. And I just say, have a professional profile and have a personal one. Don't need to see your swimsuit pictures on your professional one, okay? Thank you so much. That's a parenthesis, but yes, do it. I think this basically hasn't been an interview, it's just been me venting about shit. Wow. Don't ask me about politics either, because then we'll be here till tomorrow. No,
don't ask any of us about that.
However, I think just to inspire you on your next show, like a complete change of direction, on Netflix, there's a really good series called The History of Black British Music. It's all about jungle and drum and bass. You would love it, because that's where you're going next. I'm joking.
Don't say it, because we'll probably take it on board, and then...
Good.
We did get asked last summer if we could do a reggae set.
And really? We
were like, probably not. Yeah. But, you know, how much you paying, maybe. We didn't do
well, I tell you what, it's a bit of appropriation, kind of, but you could do, like, really good, like, Lovers Rock set you could do, actually. Lovers Rock, like, soft, almost calypso, romantic reggae.
Okay, well, we'll just put it on the list. It's like when we had to rock up and do Mysterious Girl.
Yeah, don't do that song.
We did.
Did you do the rap bit in the middle or not?
Yeah.
Did you really? Yeah. No, you didn't.
We did it.
Only the rapper.
Cool. Well, ladies, it's so lovely to see you. Thank you for ignoring all my advice, as always, and for saying that the advice that you did enjoy is too difficult for you to actually follow. And that I didn't understand your shows. So I don't feel undermined, but you know.
Well,
I'm just joking. I feel completely undermined.
Well, thank you, Jason. We appreciate your time, and we will book in with you, I'm sure, soon.
Cool. Thanks, ladies. Have a lovely evening. It's lovely
and
to see you.
See you.
Keep being successful. Keep being creative. Okay.
And you.
Just fucking do it. All right. See you later.
Bye.
We hope you enjoyed that as much as we did. We had a great time on that.
We
did have a great time, and actually the interview was a lot longer. So
if you want to watch the full version, you can go to YouTube, where I've only edited out some slightly inappropriate things. So there's a much more extended version. We talk a bit more about Hugh and its development as well. So we found that really helpful. I kind of, when we went back to listen to it, I was like writing things down. Yeah. So we'd love to know what you found helpful as well.
It's like a whole new session for us. So we'll keep listening to that. So remember, whatever stage you're at, whatever project you're working on, you have the power. And just do it anyway.
It is. I'm not making any Weatherspoons jokes, by the way, but it's fucking shit.
And then Kim Wilde on the back.
You said, you asked me at the beginning what you shouldn't mention, and I said Kim Wilde, and you mentioned it. Anyway, she's a gardener now, so that's it.
That's what you get.
So my dog's now trying to open the door. Oi!
That's very clever. Get him in the show. Now, hold that thought, because as well as a dog, I now have a cat at the window. Here we go. Come on, Lexi. This is it. Look at this. Welcome to the menagerie. Lexi, say hello, because you're so pretty. Aww. That's it. Go on, go and get some food. Right, sorry about that. This is a great blooper reel. Go on, off you go, love. There we go.
Just
go
have on. A pet section. A stripper section.
And a pet section. Pets. My dog is now drinking and tap dancing across the floor. So if it comes through, I
tell you, this dog needs his own show, honestly. Get him on Britain's Got Talent. The tap dancing drinking dog who opens doors.
Yes.
I've seen worse acts than that at showcases, yeah. I can tell you.
We joke about the fact that you have said, oh, well, I'll give you advice and you'll just ignore it. But well, we
like,
don't.
This podcast is like a really good example. When you said to me, we're going to do a podcast. I went, you shouldn't want to do that. No, that's taking forever. Yeah.